The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome. Today, we're doing a deep dive that honestly might just change how you think about, well, about everything you see and hear. We're exploring the work of Brian J. Rogers on human perception. And look, if you kind of think your senses are just like passive recorders, like little cameras pointing at the world.
Yeah, just soaking it all in.
Exactly. You're about to find out your brain is doing something way more complex, way more active, maybe even a bit rebellious, you could say.
It really is.
It feels so intuitive, though, doesn't it? You open your eyes, you see, I don't know, a red chair. You just assume, okay, the chair is red. And my brain just like noted that fact.
Right. Captured the redness.
But the reality is the raw information hitting your senses. It's messy. It's ambiguous. Sometimes it's just noise. It's definitely not a neat picture of the world.
And that's really the core of Rogers' argument, isn't it? The brain isn't passively receiving reality. It's actively building it, constructing it. Moment by moment.
Building it.
Wow.
Yeah.
So our mission today is to explore that central idea, perception, as this active, constructive process. It's more like inference, you know?
Yeah.
Educated guesswork, not just reception.
Okay.
And understanding this is, well, it's pretty crucial. It helps explain not just how we see things, but why sometimes we see things that, frankly, aren't there.
Are.
Or miss stuff that definitely is.
Right, like blind spots or illusions.
Exactly. So our guide for this journey is Brian J. Rogers. He's professor emeritus of experimental psychology at Oxford.
All right, Oxford. Impressive.
Yeah, and we're talking about someone who's spent, what, over 40 years doing really rigorous experimental research.
40 years. Wow.
Deep dives into spatial vision, stereopsis. That's a really fine-tuned depth perception. The real nuts and bolts of how we see space.
So what makes his take so special? I mean, there are lots of perception researchers.
Well, I think what's really powerful about Rogers is that he kind of bridges two worlds. He's a deep experimental scientist, you know, publishing hundreds of peer-reviewed papers, getting the hard data.
Okay, the real science bit.
Right. But he's also a fantastic communicator. He doesn't just give you the data points. He explains how it all fits together, how perception is this dynamic, ongoing process.
Like it's alive almost.
Exactly. He makes all this complex brain stuff, all the neural machinery feel relevant to, you know, just looking around the room. He connects it to your everyday experience.
Okay, I like that. So let's get into the main puzzle Rogers tackles. You've got this flat 2D pattern of light hitting the back of your eye, right? Your retina.
Mm-hmm. Just patches of light and dark, basically.
So how on earth does your brain turn that into the rich, stable 3D world we all just experience without even thinking about it?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. It's what's known in the field as the inverse problem.
Inverse problem. Okay, break that down.
Well, think about it. That tiny little 2D image on your retina, it could be caused by almost anything out there.
Right. Like you said, a small thing nearby or a huge thing far away could make the same size spot on my retina.
Exactly. The input itself is ambiguous. It doesn't contain the one single truth about the world. The brain doesn't know the answer just from the input. It has to figure it out. It has to infer it.
But hang on. If it's all just inference, just guessing, shouldn't we be bumping into walls all the time? It sounds kind of unreliable if you put it like that.
Ah, but that's the genius of it. These aren't just wild stabs in the dark. Rogers explains perception as a process of, get this, unconscious inference.
Unconscious inference.
Yeah. Your brain is acting like this incredibly sophisticated detective all the time. It's constantly generating the best guess, the most probable hypothesis about what's out there causing the sensory signals.
Based on what, though? How does it make a good guess? Based on two crucial things. Past experience, what's been reliable before, and the current context. It's weighing the evidence, constantly making these tiny probabilistic bets, millions of them a second, and then updating based on new information.
Wow. Okay, so it's like predictive coding, that kind of idea?
Very much related, yes.
Mm-hmm.
The brain is constantly predicting what it expects to sense next, and then adjusting if there's an error.
And Rogers doesn't just focus on vision, right? Even though that seems like the main one.
No, absolutely not. Right. Vision is, you know, dominant for humans, so it gets a lot of attention. But he stresses that these constructive processes, they apply to everything. Hearing, touch, smell, taste.
All the senses are being actively constructed.
Exactly. And maybe the real magic, the really mind-bending part, is how the brain takes all these separate kind of messy streams of information and weaves them together into one single seamless, coherent experience of reality.
Okay, let's dig into some of those mechanics, starting with something that feels so basic. how we see in 3D. You get these two flat images, one from each eye,
mm-hmm.
and boom, instant depth. How?
It's pretty amazing, isn't it? And it relies heavily on, well, primarily two types of cues. First, there's the really precise calculation your brain does using both eyes. It's called binocular disparity or stereopsis.
Because our eyes are slightly apart.
Exactly. They get slightly different views of the world. And your brain measures those tiny differences, the disparity, and uses that to calculate depth really accurately, especially for things relatively close to you.
That's why 3D movies need the special glasses, right? To feed different images to each eye.
Precisely. But notice, if you close one eye.
Yeah, I can still tell how far away things are. Maybe not perfectly, but...
Right. You don't suddenly see the world as flat.
Hmm.
That's because your brain immediately switches to using monocular cues, or sometimes called pictorial cues.
Pictorial-like. Like in paintings.
Exactly like in paintings. Artists have known these tricks for centuries. Think about occlusion. If one object blocks part of another, the blocking object must be closer. Simple rule.
Okay. Yeah. Makes sense.
Or linear perspective, where parallel lines seem to converge in the distance. Or texture gradient, where textures look finer and less detailed further away.
And you mentioned driving before, the motion parallax thing.
Oh, yeah, that's a huge one, especially for navigating. When you're moving, closer objects seem to zip past much faster than distant objects. Think about fence posts versus mountains when you're on a train.
Right. The posts fly by, the mountains barely move.
That difference in apparent speed is a really powerful cue your brain uses constantly to judge distance and depth while you're moving.
Okay, so we build up this 3D space. What about actually interacting with it, identifying things and acting on them?
Ah, yes. This leads to another really influential idea Rogers discusses, the two visual systems hypothesis. It suggests vision isn't just one monolithic thing in the brain. It kind of splits into two major pathways doing different jobs.
Two pathways.
So first, you've got the ventral stream. Think of it running down toward your temporal lobe. This is often called the what pathway. Its job is object recognition identification.
So this is the bit that says, ah, that's a coffee cup, or that's my set of keys.
Exactly. It's about identifying what you're looking at. Then there's the dorsal stream, which heads up towards the parietal lobe. This is the where-how pathway.
Where-how.
The system is largely non-conscious, surprisingly. It's all about spatial information, where things are, and crucially, guiding your actions in relation to them. Reaching, grasping, navigating around obstacles.
So one part knows what it is, the other knows how to interact with it.
You got it. Think of it like this. The ventral stream is like the librarian telling you that's volume 3 of the encyclopedia. The dorsal stream is the system that guides your hand perfectly to that specific spot on the shelf, shapes your fingers to grasp the spine, and lifts it without knocking over the books next to it. All calculated on the fly.
Wow. And is there actual proof these are separate?
Oh, yes. The classic and, quite frankly, astonishing evidence comes from patients with specific types of brain damage, like patient DF.
What happened to her?
She had damage primarily to her ventral stream. The result? She couldn't consciously recognize objects by sight. You could show her a pen, she wouldn't know what it was. Show her a slot, she couldn't tell you its orientation.
So her what pathway was gone?
Essentially, yes. But, and this is the amazing part, if you asked her to pick up the pen, her hand would shape correctly to grasp it. If you asked her to post a letter through the slot, her hand would orient the letter perfectly to match the slot's angle, even though she couldn't consciously tell you the angle.
No way. So her action system, the how pathway, was still working fine.
Exactly. Her body knew how to interact with the object even when her conscious mind couldn't identify it. It's profound evidence that these systems can operate independently. Really makes you question what seeing even means.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so the brain figures out space, figures out what things are and how to grab them. But the world is still a jumble of features, right? How does it group things into actual coherent objects?
Right, another huge problem. That's where the classic gestalt principles come into play. These are like the brain's built-in automatic rules for organizing sensory information. They impose structure.
Gestalt. Yeah. Like the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, that idea.
That's the spirit of it, yeah. So we automatically group things based on proximity. Things close together belong together.
Yeah.
Or similar-looking things get grouped. Closure, we tend to see complete shapes even if parts are missing.
Like connecting the dots mentally.
Kind of, yeah. And maybe the most fundamental one is figure-ground segregation. Your brain has to constantly decide for every part of the visual scene, Is this the main object, the figure, or is it just the background, the ground?
Oh, like that classic illusion. Is it a vase or is it two faces looking at each other?
Exactly. The Rubens vase face illusion. You can see one or the other, but not both at the same time, right?
Yeah, it flips back and forth.
That flipping shows the active work your brain is doing. It's making a decision, assigning ownership of the contour line to either the faces or the vase. It's not passively receiving both. It's actively constructing one interpretation at a time.
So even just seeing an object is an active process.
Fundamentally.
Yeah.
And remember, this isn't just vision. Our perception is deeply multisensory. The old idea of five separate senses working in isolation, it's just wrong.
Okay. So how does that work?
The brain is a master integrator. It's constantly combining information from different senses to create a richer, more robust, and usually more accurate picture of what's going on.
Can you give an example?
The absolute classic mind-blowing example is the McGurk effect. Have you ever seen this?
I think so. Is that the one with the video and the sound not matching?
That's the one. You watch a video of someone clearly saying the syllable gah, G-A-H.
Okay.
But the audio track playing is actually them saying bah, B-H.
Right, so a visual gah, audio bow. What do you actually perceive?
You hear dah, D-A-H. A completely different sound that wasn't present in either the visual or the audio stream alone.
Whoa. Okay, yeah, I remember seeing that now. It totally messes with your head.
Right. It's immediate visceral proof. Your brain takes the conflicting information from your eyes and ears and produces the best fit, the most plausible single event. In this case, it sort of averages them out or finds a compromise into da.
So my eyes literally change what I hear.
Precisely. It shows that perception isn't modular in that sense. The senses are constantly talking to each other, influencing each other to create that unified reality.
Okay, this is a lot. Let's try and pull back and maybe summarize some of the big overarching themes from Roger's work. What's the first key takeaway?
I'd say theme one has to be the brain is fundamentally a prediction machine. This really emphasizes top-down processing.
Top-down meaning it's not just reacting to signals coming up from the senses.
Exactly. It's using its existing knowledge, its model of the world, its expectations, its context, to actively predict what sensory input it's about to receive.
Okay. Why bother predicting? Why not just wait for the data?
It's vastly more efficient. It speeds things up. But the huge implication is your expectations literally shape what you perceive.
Right. So if I expect to see something, I'm more likely to see it, even if it's ambiguous.
Or even if it's not there. Think about confirmation bias.
Yep.
Your brain is already predicting evidence that confirms your beliefs, making it genuinely harder to see the evidence that contradicts them.
That's slightly worrying, but makes sense. Okay, theme two.
Theme two. Evolutionary pressures shaped our perception for utility, not necessarily accuracy.
Utility over accuracy, meaning?
Our perceptual systems evolved over millions of years. The driving force wasn't to create a perfectly accurate, objective replica of the world in our heads. It was to solve survival problems.
Like finding food, avoiding predators, finding mates.
Exactly. Stuff that helps you survive and reproduce. So perception needs to be useful for guiding behavior, for making quick, good enough decisions in a dangerous world. Perfect accuracy might be too slow or computationally expensive.
So it's better to be slightly wrong about the exact shade of red of a berry, perhaps, but really, really good at detecting the subtle movement of a snake in the grass.
Precisely. That trade-off explains why we're amazing at certain things, like face recognition or motion detection, things vital for social interaction and survival.
Yeah.
But maybe not so great at others, like intuitive statistics or remembering long lists of abstract facts. Our perceptual and cognitive skills reflect what was useful for survival, not necessarily for grasping objective truth.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. What's a third theme?
I think a really important one is how we should view errors, particularly illusions. They are invaluable scientific tools.
Right. We tend to think of illusions as tricks or times when our brain messes up.
Yeah, we feel kind of fooled by them. But Rogers and many perception scientists argue we should see them differently. An illusion isn't a random failure.
It's just math.
Exactly. Illusions are predictable. They happen reliably under specific conditions. And why they happen tells us something fundamental about the underlying rules and assumptions the brain is using all the time.
So when an illusion works, it's because the brain is applying a rule that's normally really useful. But in this specific weird context, that rule leads to the wrong answer.
You got it. The illusion reveals the hidden mechanism. It's like you only notice the assumptions your software makes when you give it unusual input that causes a crash. Illusions are like controlled crashes. For perception, they let us peek under the hood.
I like that. Okay, so don't feel dumb when you see an illusion. Feel curious.
Definitely. They're windows into the mind.
Rogers has some great ways of summing this up, doesn't he? I remember seeing some core ideas highlighted.
Yeah, he really crystallizes it. One key idea is something like, perception is not about what the world is like, but about what the world is like for us.
Okay, unpack that. For us.
It emphasizes the subjective nature, right? And the utility aspect.
Right.
Reality isn't just objectively out there. Our perception crafts a version tailored to our needs, our biology, our goals as an organism.
Right. A bee perceives the world very differently because it needs different information from it.
Precisely. Another core idea that really hammers the point home is, we do not see with our eyes or hear with our ears. We see and hear with our brains.
Ah, yeah. That shifts the focus dramatically.
It really does. It reminds you that the sense organs are just the input devices, the sophisticated transducers, all the magic, all the interpretation, the construction of the experience itself. That happens in the brain.
And there was one more, linking back to the prediction theme.
Yes. The brain is not a recording device, but a prediction machine, constantly generating hypotheses about the sensory future. That pretty much encapsulates the whole framework we've been discussing. Active, predictive, constructive.
Okay, so knowing all this, knowing that our reality is this constructed best guess, how can that actually help us in everyday life? What are the applications?
Well, one big one is definitely improved decision-making and critical thinking.
How so?
If you really internalize the idea that your perception is shaped by your expectations and biases, that you might literally not see things that contradict your assumptions.
Yeah.
It should make you more intellectually humble, more willing to question your first impressions. It encourages you to actively seek out disconfirming evidence to ask, okay, how could I be wrong here? What am I not seeing?
That's a really valuable skill. Okay, what else?
Well, think about technology and design. This knowledge isn't just academic. It's used everywhere.
Like in making websites easy to use?
Exactly. User interface, UI and user experience, UX design, rely heavily on gestalt principles, how to group buttons, how to use visual hierarchy so people intuitively know where to look.
Right, making things feel natural.
And things like motion parallax and depth cues are absolutely critical for creating convincing virtual reality, VR. You have to trick the perceptual system effectively.
And self-driving cars too, I guess. They have to solve the same problems.
They have to solve exactly the same inverse problem computationally. Taking sensor data and inferring the 3D structure of the world, identifying objects, predicting movement, it's all based on understanding these principles of perception.
Okay, one more application.
I think on a more personal level, it fosters empathy and social understanding.
How does understanding perception help with empathy?
Well, if you accept that everyone's perception is constructed based on their unique history, their culture, their expectations, their current state, then you realize that two people can witness the exact same event, say, a political rally or a simple disagreement, and literally perceive it differently. They construct different realities from the same raw data.
Right. So disagreement isn't always about one person being right and the other being wrong or malicious.
Exactly. It might just be that their brains, based on different priors, constructed different interpretations. Recognizing that can lead to more tolerance, more willingness to understand why someone sees things differently rather than just dismissing their view.
That's a really powerful point. So as we wrap up, what was the most surprising or maybe your favorite insight from diving into Rogers' work?
For me, it's probably the sheer unbelievable computational complexity hidden in the most mundane actions.
Like what?
Like just reaching out to pick up your coffee cup. Feels effortless, right? Automatic.
Totally.
But when you break it down, calculating the 3D location, the shape, programming the exact trajectory and grip force, adjusting for weight, identifying it as your cup, all in milliseconds while filtering out distractions. It's staggering. The amount of sophisticated computation your brain does constantly without you having any conscious access to it is just mind-boggling. We take this incredible feat of natural engineering completely for granted.
Yeah, that really reframes everyday actions. Okay, my final thought or takeaway is maybe the big picture synthesis.
Go for it.
It's that the rich, stable, continuous reality you experience right now is essentially a simulation, a controlled hallucination, as some cognitive scientists put it.
Controlled by reality, constrained by sensory input.
Right. It's not just making stuff up arbitrarily. It's constrained by the real world. But the experience itself, it's generated by your brain. constructed second by second for the ultimate purpose of helping you navigate the world successfully.
A masterful real-time construction job.
Exactly. So maybe the question to leave everyone chewing on is this. If your reality is built for usefulness, for utility, rather than perfect objective accuracy, how often should you really trust your gut feelings, your immediate perceptions? When do you trust your eyes? And when do you trust your knowledge that your eyes might be playing tricks designed to help you survive, not necessarily to show you the truth?
That's a good one to ponder.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acotra Foundation.